I'm Frederick Furbish, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 338, April 9th, 2009. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out, you know you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen. And of course, we thank the Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Challenge. On today's program, McLaren called before the World Motorsports Council. Ferrari, are they really stupid this year? Did David Ryan get a fair shake? Motorsports Mondial with Nasser, and of course we have a special interview with Harry Tinknell and an up-and-coming young driver, Frederick Vervich. Stephen, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Oh, I'm just so wonderful. It's just McLaren, 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 McLaren. I mean, I'm not even hearing about Renault, how terrible they're doing, and the diffuser thing is sort of fading away. But there is good news. McLaren came out just late yesterday that they've requested, because the diffuser meeting in front of the World Motorsports Council is on the 14th, I believe, of April. And the McLaren invitation to speak to the WMSC, it's on the 29th, but McLaren has just put in a request that if they could go ahead and argue their case right after the diffuser case is argued. So still no answer from the FIA. I think McLaren is just trying to get to grips with this and get it behind them, but I think they're in a heap of trouble. Steve, your thoughts on this whole thing, and do you think
I think McLaren wants to save themselves two things: a plane ticket back in front of the council, and two, if the diffusers are allowed or made legal, then and they get kicked out, then they don't have to worry about dealing with designing one.
That's true, but still, I mean, I'm hoping that they don't get kicked out.
Yeah, it would be terrible. We're only looking at the second race of the season. You know, they were penalized in the race in which they lied. I understand they went back. You know, penalize them again, fine them. You know, don't kick them out. You take some money from them. They've got plenty of it. Because I think it cheapens the entire series if we end up losing a team, especially one of notoriety such as McLaren.
They just won the World Drivers' Championship last year.
Exactly. They're the defending champions of the driver's title. And I think it hurts the sport if the FIA takes something that drastically punitive as to kick them out of the championship.
Well, there's certainly something afoot at McLaren. And I mean, I've always called them the dark side because of their sort of militaristic kind of attitude.
I always thought it was the silver and gray. You thought they looked a little bit like Darth Vader.
Yeah, that Star Wars thing, perhaps. And I don't know. And then when Fernando went there, that exploded. And it seems to have sort of spiraled completely out of control, especially after the espionage saga. Ron Dennis stepping down last year, handing the baton over to Whitmarsh. And this thing has just exploded into a smoke bomb of ridiculousness.
Yeah, and I really don't understand McLaren going to all this trouble, or basically, you know, putting themselves in a position to get into a whole lot of trouble over a lousy point. You know, knowing that, but if you just, all the stewards had to do is go back and look at the telemetry from the cars to see which cars were where at what point on the track, and could have determined it from themselves. And, you know, hey, safest course is always the truth.
I agree. And the worst part is Dave Ryan getting basically the you fired.
He got the Nigel Stepney is what he got.
Well, worse than that, because I really I think full responsibility should go to Martin Whitmarsh.
I think that Martin Whitmarsh has to step up and go, hey, we made a mistake. You know, we made a mistake because, hey, I'm the boss and it happened under my watch. I have a hard time believing that Ryan would have gone this far without consulting with the team principal before, you know, especially to go back in front of the stewards after, you know, the recordings had come out and basically state this, you know, basically regurgitate the same statements they made in Melbourne, which were lies. And it just didn't, that's got to be a team decision.
I absolutely agree. And hopefully they won't get kicked out. But when you read the FIA statement and the charges per se, they're very pointed, very tough. And I think it's going to actually be worse than we think.
God, I hope not. Fine them, you know, give them a nice big fat fine like we did last time, you know, and then 6 months down the road, you can basically, you know, cut it down to half or nothing or $2, whatever.
Yeah, and I feel sorry for all the sponsors.
Especially, and I would expect that a lot of the sponsors have clauses in their contracts that allow them, you know, some remediation if that car is not, you know, running for the championship.
Not only that, but I bet you Lewis Hamilton wishes he could retract that statement. I believe it was last year when he said he wanted to spend his entire racing career at McLaren.
Yeah, well, it sounds like to me like he already has retracted it in some of the press clippings I've seen where he and his father have kind of come out to the press and go, hey, we're not so sure we want to stick around.
It's a pretty sad state of affairs, but we'll see what happens, and let's look forward to the beautiful Grand Prix in China. Okay, let's move on to Ferrari. Obviously, they've made some ridiculous mistakes, blaming Schumacher, when really, he's the Dave Ryan of Ferrari, except that they didn't fire him because he's still the machismo. But they were blaming Michael Schumacher for the bad call on the wet tires going on Raikkonen's car a bit too early in the race.
What's he doing making that call?
I'm sure he's sitting there chit-chatting with everybody else, but it's a joint venture. It's called a team effort.
Well, not only that, but ultimately, again, that's the principal's call. You know, the race engineer may want to do it, but he's got to run that one up the flagpole. And I'm sure that Michael, you know, Michael's in the loop. And Michael, hey, what do we got to lose? We're already, you know.
Well, what pisses me off is if it had worked and the rain had just started coming down and Raikkonen would have been a hero, all of a sudden the team principal of Ferrari would have been a hero, and I don't think Schumacher's name would have come up. The Italians would have taken all the credit.
Yeah.
But since it didn't work, ha-ha, that German guy did it. So, I don't know. And it was funny, Montezemolo is trying to regroup the Ferrari team because he knows that, you know, they're professionals, they're frustrated. The Italian press is probably just down on their necks.
I'm sure they're just getting pounded in the Italian press. But no, we kind of foresaw this last year.
We were
expecting this to happen a little bit sooner than it has now.
That's true.
And that when they went back to basically Italian management, that things were going to start to get kind of dicey, and that, you know, if there was any kind of hiccup, the wheels were going to start to come off because the Italians just get a little overpassionate and don't step back and go, okay, here's what we need to do. They just start going,
you mean they're
freaking out.
They need that brawn.
Or you know, even
steadiness.
Jean Todt. Jean Todt was very good at basically the buck stops here kind of thing, you know, and not letting things spiral out of control like they seem to be at the moment at Ferrari. And, you know, and of course everybody's latched on to, you know, Felipe's boss's comment going, we didn't just become stupid. It's like, okay, you have it?
Well, he was fighting for the championship last year, the last lap of the race, you know, lost by 1 point, and now, you know, he doesn't even get out of Q1, in the second race of the season. So he must be really frustrated.
Well, that was a team mistake, too, in that he should have been on the track at the end of that period to at least have the opportunity, but already was in the garage with the tires off.
Exactly. But the Montezemolo has got a plan, And I quote, I brought with me a monk's hood to make everyone understand that we have to tackle this season with humility, and made the point that I don't want to find us on some sort of TV comedy video program after each race, unquote. So
to bring the flail too?
Well, he doesn't want to, and I also read that he doesn't want to be on candid camera. In other words, we need to stay calm and not let this get out of control. And you know what? I think we're in for an interesting season.
I think the way it started, the whole season, all the way around, and I think really that the wild card at this moment is what the FIA decides in the diffusers. I think they should legalize them, because that will put everybody else back into the race, because you know the teams that are stalling right now are teams that can put a fat diffuser on the back of their car within a race weekend, because they have the resources to do that. And I'm sure every one of these teams already has a design, and more than likely already has it in the fabrication process.
And of course the diffuser, which is now second to the rest of the Schlemazel and Schlemiel in Formula One right now.
It's kind of fallen off the page too with the McLaren
a little
thing.
Bit, but its significance is very important, because it gives the downforce you need and grip levels in the back of the car, and it really was significant at the Malaysian race. And once again, Nick Heidfeld was the first guy on the podium without a diffuser so far this season.
Yeah, and he probably wouldn't have been there if we hadn't had the whole, if the weather really hadn't played a big part in this race.
Exactly. All fast laps are diffuser fast laps. We're not seeing the token Kimi Raikkonen fast laps this season so far.
No, he's not even close.
Exactly.
Right now, what I think, in the last race, the only people to carry fast laps, well, there was one diffuser fast lap that was Vettel, but it was down the next lap.
Exactly. So diffuser, diffuser, diffuser. Everybody right now is making the next generation of diffuser, because I think they will be deemed legal.
Yeah, to me it makes more sense. It makes great sense, because the one thing that, you know, they were trying to take away downforce, but I think without it, you take away too much. The car becomes too twitchy. You put the diffuser in there, you get some of that backside downforce back, and you get traction. And I think that's where these guys are really seeing the advantages coming out of the corners. They can get out of the corners, and the people without the diffusers are having a heck of a time getting out of there, especially with no traction control. You get a little bit of wheel spin, a little bit of slippage.
And right now, if I had a choice between KERS and diffuser, I would go with the diffuser.
Yeah, definitely.
So there you have it. Also, before we go to break, I found this very interesting. The former Canadian Grand Prix promoter, Mr. Normand Le Gault, believes that Formula One teams should abandon the FIA and Bernie Ecclestone. He was speaking to the French press, La Presse newspaper, and he said to them, "Why don't you reorganize yourself like a North American sports league? When the Montreal Canadiens play the Boston Bruins, they don't ask the International Hockey Federation to referee the match. The teams could leave tomorrow morning. They could call it the Grand Prix World Championship. And if you have Ferrari, BMW, Williams, or Renault, or what have you, and if you have Lewis Hamilton, that seems pretty much like a real thing." And he makes a good point. If these FOTA members really
are tired of being under Bernie's rule,
and splitting 50-50 with the revenue is the big problem.
Yeah.
And this is a serious situation that Bernie needs to... And I know Bernie. Bernie's a tough guy, a tough negotiator, and he will mock these kinds of statements.
Oh, he's going to be all over that. And, you know, they couldn't do it. And, you know,
he's going to say they don't have the testicles.
They can't do it. They if they try to do it, I'll sue them. You know, he'll throw out like three or four different arguments at it, and none of them will be, and most of them will be smoke. Because, like you say, if the FOTA decided next month that they were going to pull out of Formula One and move and basically start their own series, they probably wouldn't have any trouble. The problem is, I think most of them may be under contract to the FOM as participants, and so there may be issues there. And I don't know that they can get rid of the FIA all that easily, because, you know, they are the, you know, motor racing body in the world, and it would be tough for them to, you know, kind of go out and make their own new rules. But I think they could have a lot more control of what direction the FIA goes.
We'll see what happens, and we'll see if Bernie even bothers to respond to Mr. Le Goal's thoughts and concepts on that. So there you have it, Steve. We're going to take a quick break. The white stretch Camry has just pulled up, and I noticed Nasser has added spinners to the limo. So keep up the good work, Nasser. And I know he's dying to talk about what's going on in Formula One at this stage. So we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the man himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards from Jim, who provided the opening music, and Connie Francis, who's sorry now. We start today with a little motorsports mantra. We all live in a yellow submarine. We all get torpedoed once in a lifetime, sometimes more than once. And we live and learn. When you know U-boats are lurking in Gulf of Tonkin, why even go there? Of course, I'm referring to the latest McLaren self-inflicted misery. And question of the week is, how stupid can you get when it was only two seasons ago your team was fined $100 million and thrown out of the Constructors' Championship? Within 24 hours of Martin Whitmar saying team did not lie, team and driver communication proved him wrong. The driver, the talented but now tainted Mr. Hamilton, had also given an interview before marching to the stewards, and now he is truly, as in Yarno, very sorry. All this for one point. If this scenario was played out in Sao Paulo last year, one can understand world championship was at stake. But all this in the opening round, BBC commentator and ex-McLaren driver Martin Brundle called it a professional dive. And who can argue with that?
And whilst waiting for the stewards, I was instructed and misled by my team manager to withhold information, and that's what I did. And sincerely apologize to the stewards for wasting their time and for making them look silly.
The wrath of FIA may still come down on the sport's youngest world champion, but if they feel sorry for him and do not ban him from a race or two or a full season, then I have good news for him. Bill Clinton once said America is a very forgiving place, and he should know. Motor racing fans in general are also very forgiving. Lewis Hamilton and McLaren can put this all a lap behind by winning some races soon, as long as the team is not thrown out this for the remainder of the season. Winning on the track is what this business is all about. When Formula One comes to Monte Carlo, I recommend Lewis Hamilton by Yarno Trulli some Martini and Rossi. There is a nice spot at Roscoe's. Easy to park there.
Yeah, I heard they have a valet parking.
Absolutely, and a pretty famous guy can help you out. Now the Kiwi who took the fall, Davy Ryan, he was at McLaren when James Hunt won the title way back in 1976. Time will tell if he was the scapegoat or the sacrificial lamb. But all of this is very bad for the sport. And that was this week's Motorsports Mantra. What say you, folks?
I agree with you, Nass. It's a terrible situation. I'm absolutely perplexed why they would do this for one single point. I know there was some confusion, but still, and I think the responsibility lies at the top. I'm really not very happy with Davey Ryan getting canned on this issue. A man that should have retired with honors, just like Joe Ramirez did from McLaren.
Yeah, I think there's more to the story. But let me give you a couple of drivers' take on this. Ralph Schumacher, who was commentating because Niki Lauda was not available for, I think, Premier TV, German TV network, he said, you know, when you're in a team or in a situation like this, you do what the team tells you. And that's what I read his quote. And if you listen to the Checkered Flag, Five Live podcast, BBC, and, you know, those people are there. Anthony Davidson is one of their commentators, and he said the same thing. He said, they asked him, you know, would you do something like this? He said, you know, with all the pressure and you win and lose as a team, you driver will do what the team tells him, which still does not make Lewis Hamilton all innocent. You know, he could have always said no. But I think there's more to this story. I personally just don't buy it, that it's all Davey Ryan, you know, and I just hope. I'm sure there will be some serious sanctions on McLaren, but I just hope the maximum they do is throw them out for two or three races. We don't want 18 cars or 16 cars and, you know, stuff like that.
I agree. I'm hoping it's similar to what happened to BAR Honda when they got caught with that monkey business with the fuel tank in Monaco, I believe.
Yes.
They were excluded for
a
race.
Yeah, for two races, I think they were excluded. So that would be reasonable, where it puts you a little further back, and you may suffer a little bit, but at least the sponsors don't suffer, the viewers don't suffer. I mean, let's not forget, McLaren has a lot of fans.
Yeah. And
like that, but they're racing the world champion.
And I remember going back to that bar scenario, Honda, you know, the extra fuel tank or whatever it was, Nick Frye sitting and saying, I had no idea. I mean, he looked like Kenneth Lay of motor racing that day.
Exactly. And Honda didn't fire anybody. They just moved on.
Well, they had to, and they really have moved on. This is, you know, we all make mistakes, and the thing is, the audacity of these two people, Davey Ryan and Lewis Hamilton, first they lied initially in Australia. Okay, you know, nobody's perfect. I have read it, actually, it's in that FIA statement now, what they're calling the invitation. What an invitation, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah. And it says that they were requested again to clarify the situation, and despite listening to their own conversation, their team-to-driver conversation, they still denied.
Stuck to their story.
Yeah, that is just like, wow. I mean, what are you thinking, and what do you want? And the thing is, you know, it was only 2007 when they were sanctioned $100 million and I believe still on probation. I mean, what is the thought process that they're going to go and lie again?
I don't know. I think it's the lack of thought process.
Yeah. I could understand at the race. After the race, heat of the moment, you know, you've just...
Adrenaline is flowing.
Yeah, you're still piped up. But to come back the week later, be, you know, basically listen to the tapes and then go, oh, those aren't... it's not what we said. Wait a minute. Those are recordings of what you said. What are you talking about? Just to kind of stick to that story when, you know, basically if they just ponied up and said, yeah, we were mistaken. You don't even have to necessarily admit guilt. We go, oh, we were mistaken in Melbourne. That's right. We, you know, there was some confusion with where we were on the track, blah, blah, blah. And it'd be over. We'd be done with this.
And how quickly the pendulum swings. Last year, Jenson Button was forgotten in the British limelight. Lewis Hamilton, the hero for the British. And now the pendulum has swung completely in the opposite direction. Jenson Button is now
the darling,
the Nigel Mansell of the future, while Lewis Hamilton's beautiful reputation is being tarnished.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Exactly.
I mean, now to action on the track. some notes on the Malaysian Grand Prix. This was the first time since 1991 Australian Grand Prix that a Formula One race was cut short and half points awarded. Winner in Adelaide back then was Ayrton Senna in his McLaren Honda over his career-long rival, the lovable Nigel Mansell in his Williams Renault. The most famous and controversial red flag race due to heavy rain was the 1984 Monaco Grand Prix, where both Ayrton Senna and Stefan Beloff performed head and shoulders above the rest. Alain Prost was the winner after Jackie Ickx displayed the red flag. The remaining two half-point races were both during the 1975 season, the first one I remember so very well. The Spanish Grand Prix at Montjuic Park, which ended in tragedy when Rolf Stommelin, a German driver from Cologne, crashed, killing four people. The driver walked away but later lost his life in a racing accident at Riverside in Southern California. You know, some years ago I was in Cologne and I met my calendar distributor, Herbert, and his wife. And they live in a town called Nombres, which is not too far from Cologne. And I did not know that Rolf Stommelin was, at that time, was from that area. So we're sitting there in this nice area having coffee, and he mentioned, you know, I asked him, any German drivers from this area? And he said, yeah, Rolf Stommelin was from, and, you know, it really hit me hard because, you know, when he had this accident in Spain, I was like a teenager, and then I remember when he was killed in a sports car race. Amazing, you know, how time flies. Another German driver, Jochen Mass, took his first and only win driving for McLaren. That was in that 1975 Spanish Grand Prix. An historical point to this race is Lella Lombardi's sixth place, making her the only female to score a point, or half a point to be accurate. The 1975 Austrian Grand Prix at the beautiful Österreichring near Salzburg was won by the Orange Beta Tool-sponsored March, driven by the Monza Gorilla Vittorio Brambilla. Tragedy struck in Sunday's morning warm-up session when Mark Donohue crashed in his Penske entered March after a tire failure and passed away a few days later from his head injuries. Mark Donohue gave Captain Roger Penske his first victory at the Brickyard in 1972, and today his son David competes in the Grand Am Series. And you were talking about how important McLaren is. When Donohue won in 1972 Indy 500, it was in a McLaren.
Right.
So it's amazing how much history is being tossed around here. Fast forward to 2009. After two rounds, Brawn and Button are unbeaten, and Heikki Kovalainen has yet to finish a racing lap. Button also recorded the fastest lap. You know, you were talking about, Steve, about the diffuser thing. How true it is, I don't know, but in the Australian Grand Prix press conference, Barrichello said that it's not just the diffuser because his diffuser was damaged. You know, he was hit from all sides. So I have a feeling that this car is just a very good package.
Yeah, well, they've had, 19 months to develop it?
Yeah.
And it's showing pace. The fact that it's outrunning the other diffuser cars in a lot of cases, you know, they're basically running away from the Williams and Toyota a lot of the time. This is definitely good. You take the diffuser off this, it's probably still going to be a very competitive car.
Yeah. I think the diffuser brings 6/10.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So if you bring in, if you put a diffuser on a Renault, then it's 1.2. Wow.
Exactly.
Voila. But, you know, the interesting thing is, like, they used to say all the time, Steve Matchett especially, that, you know, aerodynamics is the key in getting, you know, with all these rules and regulations, spec tires. And you look at all these companies like Fiat, Fiat and Ferrari, Mercedes and McLaren, Honda, of course, they had tremendous, tremendous wind tunnel facilities, not one but two, running 24/7. And so I think it's now the new rules has thrown back to the engineers, like do a design with mechanical, you know, grip. So cream is rising to the top, I guess.
Well, completely changes the way the car's got to be set up because now suspension becomes a lot more important because you've got to keep those tires on the ground because otherwise you've got no grip because it's all mechanical, or majority of it is mechanical now instead of using the wind to push the car to the track.
Yeah, and these cars look so beautiful. You know, I never liked those barge boards and things hanging around because some of them some years ago were going totally out of control.
Well, I think 2005 they still look pretty good,
yeah,
especially in the blue.
Yeah, mile 7. Yeah. Well, you know, winning is beautiful.
Yeah, winning makes any car look good.
Yeah. Okay, Ferrari had two drivers in the top three in the championship last year. This season so far they have three DNFs and will be looking for first points of the season in round 3 in Shanghai. The curse-related fire on Kimi's car proved Finns can leap as well as the frogs. No hard feelings, Mr. Clark Rogers. A little singer of the day there.
That's fine.
You have thick skin like me, right?
I am thick skin. Yeah, you have to be when you're the host.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, our digital slings and arrows are coming every week. And please keep them coming. The decision to put him on full wets was in the same league as McLaren's blunder in qualifying at Monza last year. Only question I have for Kimi is, what will you do for a Klondike bar?
Exactly.
That was classic, you know.
That was beautiful. I liked it. But, you know, there was a certain macho-ness for him saying, you know, why am I standing in the rain? He got himself a little ice cream bar, put his flip-flops on, and he was heading to the airport.
Yeah. That was so Kimi. Yes, the drivers are in the cockpit, and here is Kimi Räikkönen in shorts. There is Michael Oak.
Exactly. Not only that, but standing in the rain in Malaysia is like standing in the shower.
I read one of the journalists wrote that there was so much rain, you could hardly walk, let alone race. And, all, you know, talking about the Malaysian race, thanks to our all-time listener and friend, Christy Paul, for sending us some photos, which are now, we put them on the website, and I appreciate his feedback to us. So we'll have, you know, like roving reporters everywhere, hopefully someday. Why are you rolling your eyes?
We need roving reporters.
Yeah.
At our pay scale.
Yeah. Flavor for the weeks to come for Martin Whitmarsh, maybe Chunky Monkey.
Yeah.
I think him and Lewis Hamilton. Actually, I read that Lewis Hamilton's dad, I'm not sure if this is all true, has been on the phone or trying to be on the phone quite a bit with Max Mosley. My son is innocent.
So I think he's on the phone with Di Montezemolo.
Yeah, that's very possible, too. This is very bad.
It's very bad.
A lot of it, too. What is his contractual obligation? Well, again, it's like Fernando's contract where if these guys, it's probably written that if they are disqualified or, you know, thrown out of the championship, the contract's...
No, but the problem is...
escape clause.
Just like the Schumacher... I mean, you know, we all admit Schumacher was a fantastic driver.
Yeah, sure.
But his Rascasse moment, his Damon Hill moments, his Jacques Villeneuve moments will always follow him. They won't be forgotten. They're always talked about and brought up in conversation. And I'm afraid this little white lie may follow Lewis Hamilton for years to come.
No, but the thing is, you know, if you live and learn, which certainly they did not do from the 2007 situation, you move on, you know, and the guy is very talented as
absolutely.
Well. Yeah. Ask your 6'10 professor. He can vouch for him.
Yeah, but he's doing fine.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Wow. Did you see the survey they took in Italy?
And
who should go and who the Italians want at the Scuderia?
Well, you know, Alonso and Kubica and Ayrton.
The top of the heap.
No, they raced all their young lives in Italy.
Yes,
because of
and
karting.
They're very popular there.
You know our friend Dr. Kerry Beale in San Diego, mm-hmm. He had gone some years ago to Italy and he went to this Ristorante Cavallino, which is right across the from the Ferrari factory. And this is some years ago when Herr Schumacher was ruling the world. And he said he was so surprised that he thought there were mostly Schumacher pictures portrayed. He said the place was full of Senna's portraits. So it's, you know, if you live in Italy and you speak the language, they're going to like you. That's why they like Massa. He even argued with Alonso in Italian.
It's beautiful.
Oh, that was very lovely. Okay, now we come to Toyota on the podium in both races and threatening to win their first ever Grand Prix Formula One race this year. This will be very good for them, for the sport, and in particular for Japanese racing fans. Glock is winless in Formula One, and clock is ticking on Trulli's career. The Italian ex-karting world champion made his Formula One debut in 1997, and only victory so far was in Monte Carlo in 2004, where Michael Schumacher had some tunnel vision issues.
Yeah, and the Renault looked good there when Trulli was with Renault.
Yeah, and then I remember Michael Schumacher was all pissed off at Montoya.
Of course.
Yeah. That
was a weird situation.
Yeah, that was one in case where Montoya was innocent.
I agree.
BMW Sauber, while Kubica was left on the grid at the start, teammate Nick Heidfeld drove to a podium finish in second place and rode into history as the driver with most podium finishes, number is 12, without a win. He shares this honor with Stefan Johansson, who is also known as the Carly Simon lookalike. Have you noticed that?
Haven't noticed it.
Or you're so vain, you did not know that.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Star may be fading away from F1. Norbert Hogg, bossman of Mercedes Motorsports, has expressed displeasure at the new McLaren mayhem with the stewards. There are reports the parent company, Daimler, may take a second look at F1 and some other programs as they are facing a $1 billion loss each month, which is pretty much the same story with they had a board meeting in Berlin this week, and obviously, you know, when things are not working out, fingers are pointed. So some people are saying, you know, get out of Formula One, stop the Maybach production and this and that, and let's see what happens. Now to some other racing series in action at Sepang, GP2 Asia. Piquet was the winner, his team that is, driven by Diego Nunez. Second was current Toyota test driver Kamui Kobayashi in the first race. Sunday's sprint race was won by Russian Vitaly Petrov. Second was Pastor Maldonado of Venezuela. Formula BMW Asia, another support event. Gary Thompson of Ireland was the winner of the opening round. Rio Haryanto of Indonesia took victory in race 2. Now, this is very exciting. Now we come to F1 Weekly's Buttonvillo buddy, Mr. Harry Tinknell. You remember him, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. He came here with Kazim Manzoor at the end of 2007 for some seat time in a Formula BMW car. Last year, Harry stayed in karting and did some testing in a Formula Renault car. His 2009 season started last weekend at Brands Hatch in beautiful Kent countryside with a bang. Tinks, as I call him, qualified on pole and finished second, saying the feeling was as good as winning. His next race is in 2 weeks at Thruxton, and we will keep an eye on his progress. And I've sent him a Q&A that we are now doing the digital dialogue with drivers, so he sent me back that he will respond in a day or two. So we'll put his interview on the front page with your express written consent.
Of course, next,
and,
sir.
And there are some, and Brands Hatch is a very nice track, just like Laguna Seca, a lot of elevation changes.
Nice,
so,
and green.
Yeah, so there are some very nice, cool shorts from his Facebook, so, you know, we'll get those pictures also. And here is the best part, Clark Rogers, and this is all on his own, without Moa asking for it. Harry has already promised members of F1 Weekly staff free paddock passes when he gets to the big league, and free pit popsies. And you know, that's what he told me. And you know, a promise made in Bakersfield over steak and baked potato cannot be broken.
No, those are rules that are embedded in Bakersfield.
Exactly.
Contractually obligating.
Yeah. And Kazim Manzoor's Formula BMW season starts in Barcelona next month with the Spanish Grand Prix. This will be his second year with the Josef Kaufmann Racing Team of Germania. So all the best to all F1 Weekly friends and other drivers, and we'll, you know, keep a track on their progress. British Touring Car Championship season opener at Brands Hatch. Winner in race 1 was Matt Neal in his Vauxhall. Oh, I was listening to the Sunday show and you were giving some of the race results.
It was the Motorsports Mondial Junior.
Yeah, but you know what I thought? I almost heard a knock on the door from a Western Union man saying, Boudreaux, your services are no longer required.
No, that's
seriously
never going to happen. I mean, I'm amateurish at
I mean, you know, there may be budget cuts here, you know.
Yeah, it happens. But there was so much racing going on that weekend, I felt obligated for the F1 Weekly listeners to give them just a sampling, you know, an hors d'oeuvre of...
nice to know.
Everything's fine.
Now yes. I can take a second cup of mint tea.
Exactly.
You can celebrate my job.
You can keep the spinners on the limo.
The spinners were in my head at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So I mentioned winner in race 1 was Matt Neal in his Vauxhall. Rob Collard was the winner in race 2 in his BMW. Winner of race 3 on the track was Jonathan Adam, but after a 4-second penalty for pushing and shoving early race leader Jason Plato, he was classified second, and Plato and Chevrolet were handed the win on a plate made of finest silver from north of Spain, as they say in the song Brandy.
And you know what? Chevrolet needs all the wins they can get.
I read a news item today that even Volkswagen may pass GM as the bigger than GM as a car maker. So pretty soon GM would be like Subaru, I think.
Well, they're going to downsize so much. I think it's only going to be GMC, which is a truck division. You're going to have Chevrolet, and then you're going to have Cadillac. That's it.
That's what they should have done 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Instead of having, you know, all
Buicks
these
and Buicks, old
this is
well, they'll probably end up keeping Saturn too, because that's one of their.
Believe it or not, the
brand, they're trying to unload Saturn.
The brand Buick It's very, very big in China. I'm serious. I mean, you're looking at me like I'm from France.
You mean
something.
It outsells Chevrolet in San Francisco?
Yes. Exactly. No, it's a very big brand in China. Take a look. Buick and China. Google.
No, I know. And they're saying China is going to become the biggest car market in a few years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Well, good for them. I hope, you know, things work out for everybody.
Well, eventually, NASCAR will become Chinese cars.
Funny you say that. I read a news item, not sure if it's true, that Penske may go to Toyota, which makes a lot.
It makes a lot of sense.
There is a dealership called Longo Toyota in El Monte, Southern California. They sell over 1,000. Well, in heydays, they used to sell over 1,000 cars a month, and I am told that this is the largest, the only Toyota dealership that's bigger than that one is a Toyota-owned factory dealership in Tokyo. So Penske has a lot of, you know, Lexus and all these stores. So I won't be surprised. You know what? All cars at India are now powered by Honda. Okay, the way things are going, I won't be surprised if a day comes when all cars are powered by Toyota. All Camrys are running around. And no. Then, you know, I'm nearing mid-50, so maybe I can qualify in a few years.
I don't think Peugeot is going to be powered by Honda. Actually, the new Mini Cooper, the motor is a BMW Peugeot deal.
Oh, wow.
Gotcha.
BMW Peugeot.
Uh-huh.
What is Peugeot supplying?
I think it's called collaborating.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that before. Bruno Senna on the podium in the 1,000-kilometer de Catalunya at the Barcelona Grand Prix circuit. Race flow victory for David Richards, Aston Martin Racing Lola in the beautiful Gulf colors. Winning drivers were checked out. Jan Charouse, Thomas Enge, and Stefan Mücke, whose Papito owns Mücke Racing Team in Berlin. Bruno Senna and Stefan Ortelli shared the third place Orica car, and it will be good to see Bruno Senna at the Le Mans 24-hour motor race. A1GP, this was interesting. Steve, I would love to hear you say this name. Your favorite driver, Mr. Liuzzi.
Liuzzi.
Yeah,
Antonio Liuzzi.
There you go. Thank you. He will drive for Team Italy in this weekend's race at the new Portimão circuit in Portugal, and this race is this weekend. And I think he's going to do one more race. So nice of Force India to give him the time to do these
Loan
things.
Loan him out.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea because he is a good race driver.
And he's not getting seat time because of the testing limits.
Yeah. And let's see how he does against another F1 hopeful, Marco Andretti. And talking of Portugal, World Rally Championship was in Dr. Miguel's neighborhood. Same old story, another win for Sebastian Loeb and Daniel Alena in the Citroën. And then
it's out of control.
And Clark Rogers is doing his banana dance.
And now you have the reason we did a mini Mondial on Sunday because
I had an inkling.
Yes. Yeah.
But I still had my fears though.
But I mean, we gotta give kudos to Citroën and Sebastian Loeb. They're completely out of control.
No, they're dominating. Good for them. World Superbikes, Valencia, Spain. Nitro Noriyuki Haga was the winner in both races on board his Ducati. And this weekend we'll see the opening round of MotoGP season under the lights in Qatar. Nicky Hayden from Kentucky is now on a Ducati as teammate to Casey Stoner. IndyCar racing from beautiful St. Petersburg. That is a very nice place, man. I'm glad I took a trip there a few weeks ago. Winner was ex-Toyota test driver Ryan Briscoe from Sydney, Australia. Very impressive performance from Ryan Hunter-Reay, who himself is from Florida. He was recruited to Tony George's Vision team at the last minute. He finished a close second. And Justin Wilson was third for Dale Coyne Racing. Ashley Judge's bird, Dario Franchitti, was fourth upon his return to IRL with Ganassi Racing.
And Danica Patrick did not finish the race. I think she was out by lap 31.
What happened? Did you see?
She got tangled up with another driver.
Rafael Matos.
Correct. And they hit the wall. And
we had the usual, you know, come to Mary meeting. And I'm just happy for Danica that Robbie Gordon and Paul Tracy and Juan Pablo Montoya are not in the same series as her. Because these people, they love confrontation.
I know, but where was Milk Aduno? She's not doing all of the races, obviously.
I think Dorothy is going to make her appearance in Kansas.
Excellent.
I think her appearance has been delayed. As always, money issues. But we'll see. Indy Lights, double Dutch treat for Junior Struus, who won both races. Jonathan Summerton was second in race one and fourth in race two. And Southern California's Charlie Kimball was in the top 10 in both races, so good showing by all these guys. And this was the first time Junior Struce was racing in Indy Lights. Last year he was in Atlantic. American Le Mans Series, they were also in the streets of St. Pete. Acura 1-2 led by David Brabham of Australia and Scott Sharp of San Francisco Bay Area. He actually is originally from Connecticut, but his wife is the daughter of Greg Pickett. He's a very well-known Trans Am driver. And he also owns that, you know, drink power drink company called Cytomax. And he's from Black Hawk area here in Northern California. Adrian Fernandez and Luis Diaz, they were also in the Acura. They were second. And they are, of course, Dos Amigos from Mexico. Petty Blue at Indy with Andretti. The King is leaving the courtyard and coming to the brickyard. Richard Petty, in cooperation with Dreyer and Reinbold, will enter a car for John Andretti, nephew of Mario and Bambino of Mario's twin brother, Aldo. And now we come to Clark Rogers' favorite series.
Le NASCAR.
Jeff Gordon in his DuPont Chevrolet ended a 47 race winless streak by winning the race in Texas. And when you win the race in Texas, you get, you know,
boots
and a hat. Stetson and pistols.
You do? Oh, and yeah. Spurs.
Now, there you go.
You got to have a spur.
Summer wine.
Well, he was due. He was leading the championship. He was due to win a race.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Talking of DuPont, some of our listeners will remember, and you probably do too, ex-Formula One driver Brett Lunger. He was one of the drivers who pulled Niki Lauda from his burning Ferrari at Nürburgring in 1976. Brett Lunger is from the DuPont family, and I am told he's still working for them.
I think so.
Yeah, which is good for him.
Yeah, they keep it in the family over there.
Yeah. Teflon is having its effect now, so I cannot stick any longer. Thank you for listening. Das Vedania, sayonara, adios, and goodbye.
And I'm having a chemical reaction myself. So, thanks, Nasser, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. We'll come back with a couple of outstanding interviews with Frederick Vervich and, of course,
Harry Tinknell. I call him our buddy from Button Willow.
Keep up the good work, Nas. So there you have it. We'll be back after this brief message.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now we're going right to the interview segment. Our first interview is Frederick Vervich. And please, Nasser, introduce this young racing driver.
Yes, sir. Frederick Vervich is a 22-year-old racing driver from Belgium. In his first ever race in America, he finished second in the Formula Atlantic season opener at Sebring, where I went, you know, a few weeks ago. It was very impressive. And this conversation took place after the race. So obviously he was very happy that he was second in his very first race. His credentials include winning the... He was very surprised when I told him that he's been on my racing radar for a few years. Because, you know, when you're winning, your name pops up in quite a few press releases. His credentials include winning the 24 Hours Karting of Francorchamps 3 times in 4 years. Last year, he won the ATS German Formula 3 Championship against some good competition, which included Johnny Cecotto Jr. and Sebastian Saavedra, who was racing in Indy Lights this year. And Vervich took 7 wins and 10 podium finishes from 16 races, so it's very impressive. He also won the 2007-2008 Asian Formula 3 Series with 11 wins and 17 podium finishes from 18 races. So my thanks to him. And all the best to him in his racing career. And I do like his choice of favorite racing driver. Thank you, Frederick.
Okay, welcome to F1 Weekly. Frederick, you won the German championship last year, ATS, Formula 3 as they call it. What brought you to America?
Basically, I was planning to stay in Europe. I wanted to do the World Series 3.5. So that's sort of GP2 in, back in Europe. I was busy with a very competitive team, but at the end I saw the because of the economy crisis and all those things, I saw that it was not possible to have it done, to have the deal done in time. So I was watching two other opportunities, and then I got some people who said to me, yeah, the Formula Atlantic is maybe an interesting way to go because there's a lot of prize money. And so basically, in a couple of days, we worked a deal out, and I went here for this first race, and yeah, that's it.
How was the competition in German F3? Johnny Cecotto Jr. was there, and Sebastian Saavedra from
Colombia. We call him Monty Jr. What was the highlight? Tell us a little bit about the season, please.
Yeah, the season for me was it was my second German F3 season. So the first season I was vice champion. So my only target was to win the championship, and I started off with not very well. I had a bad team. And we were not able to winning races. We won one race in the wet, but that's basically it. And after over the half of the season, I decided to go away and to find another team. And from there on, we won all the races. So in the beginning, basically, we were not competitive. And at the end, we won all the races except one. And I even didn't do the last race because we were already champion and I had no money. And so it was a very interesting year. And I'm glad that because I won already the Asian F3 in the winter, and so I was glad that I won both championships. Yeah.
How is the level of competition in Asia these days?
People say it was not high, but I disagree with that because we had four really good drivers. I would say Asian F3 is quality, but not quantity at the moment. And it's a shame there are not more people because it's fun, it's cheaper, you broaden your horizons, and they have nice tracks, so I enjoyed it a lot, yeah.
Did you enjoy spicy food in Asia?
Well, to be honest, I didn't have any problems, but I enjoyed it. And people warned me also about poisoning of food and all those things, but that was all perfect, so I went there basically and I enjoyed it a lot. I saw a lot of the world, and I would do it again. Yeah.
How long were you in karting?
I started at the age of 11, and I still do karting because I love it. But I went out of competition at the age of 17. Yeah, 17 and a half, because my money was running out, and I never had the chance to drive on high level karting. Because it's all so expensive, and that's the only thing I don't have at the moment is money. So we're just trying, and yeah.
Now, was there any interest in motor racing in your family, or how did you get an interest in this thing?
Definitely, there is interest in my family. My father, he also had a kart with his brothers, and they went then driving on an airport or something like that. And then he would do also some motocross, also amateur racing. And then he would do. He did one once the Paris-Dakar race with his nephew, and so there was a little bit. And I started to drive in karting when I saw him once driving and Spa-Francorchamps in the karting race, and then from there on I asked to drive also. And a year later, I had to drive a kart.
Your country has produced one of the most famous drivers, Jackie Ickx. Is he involved in helping young Belgian drivers, or have you ever met him, or? What do you think of Vanina Ickx?
The first question, Jack Ickx. No, I never had any help of Jack Ickx or Thierry Boutsen. The only help I got from now is Bas Leenders. Maybe you know him.
Yeah, sure.
He's a very good guy. He tries to help. The others, they don't care about the younger generation. So I would say it's everybody for his own. And they're very, very in Belgium. They're very strict on if you're not good from the first moment, then you're worth nothing. And so it's quite difficult. It's everybody for his own, and you just try to find a way. Yeah. About Vanina Ickx, I don't know. Basically, based on her results, I wouldn't say that she's like her father. So I don't know her, so I cannot say a lot about it. Yeah.
Spa-Francorchamps is one of the greatest tracks of all time. Have you ever raced there? How do you like it?
I raced there back in 2006 with John Edwards, who won the race here. And that was basically the only time. So I enjoyed it. It was with a slower car, but I think it has to be fantastic with a faster car. So, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Is this your first time here in the U.S.?
Yeah, first time. First time Florida, first time everything. So It's quite exciting to be here.
What's your first impression of not just America? It's a big place, a lot of sunshine here in Florida. Also, the level of competition here compared to Europe.
I would say I'm really impressed about the level here in Atlantic, because there is a lot of prize money involved, and that makes things getting also more serious. And yeah, other drivers from all over the world trying to get their chance. And so it's very tough, and it's everybody basically with the same car, same things. And and I would say also American Motorsport or Champ Car Atlantic, the drivers are more speaking to each other than back in Europe. So it's nice, yeah.
Okay. What is your goal for this? I mean, obviously everybody wants to win every race, but realistically, what is the goal you have set for yourself that minimum I should be here at the end of the championship?
To be honest, I'm just have now a one-off deal for this race because I'm struggling with money. But I hope that I now with my first appearance that I give some interesting things for the team. And my goal here was it's very ambitious, but top three was my goal. And from the start on this week we were in pace, so why not? And to be second, I'm very glad. We could do better, but I'm glad because I finished the race. I have some prize money, and from there on we can look what's the possibilities for in the future. The championship, my goal would be a champion. Yeah.
And you know, I hope you'd complete the season final races in California. Is that correct? Or that's the Star Mazda?
I don't know exactly. I didn't see the calendar so far.
Okay, now finally I'm going to ask you, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please? Anything you want to say to them?
Yeah, just maybe it's a little bit something that everybody would say, but even with no money you can achieve things, and that's what I'm trying all the time. And if you really believe in something, yeah, you can go for it. So.
And who would you like to see win the world championship this year in Formula One?
I like Raikkonen, so it would be nice to see Raikkonen winning the championship.
And then you're complaining drivers don't talk in Europe.
No comment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Frederick, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now our second interview, Mr. Harry Tinknell, please introduce this one.
Harry Tinknell is our button below buddy. As I said earlier, he came here with Kazim Manzoor testing the Formula BMW car, and he was in karting for several years, did very well, and then decided to go with Formula Renault, which is a little bigger car than Formula BMW, and he's racing in, they have Formula Renault UK, Formula Renault Europe, NEC, Nordic European countries, so he's in the UK series, which is very competitive. And his first race was at Brands Hatch this past weekend. And this interview actually is a rerun that we did because I'm very happy that he was on pole and finished second in his first race. So we're going to reintroduce him to our listeners. And this interview was originally recorded in Bakersfield, California in late December of 2007. And hopefully we will catch up with him soon. Thank you, Tinks.
Harry, thanks for joining F1 Weekly.
Okay, I'm here in beautiful Bakersfield, California, with a young racer from all the way from England, Mr. Harry Tinknell. Harry, welcome to the show. How are you today, sir?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. You are from England, the center of motor racing, but I understand you found motor racing in a very interesting place far away from home. Please tell us about that.
Yeah, well, when I was seven, I was on holiday in Sardinia, and the hotel happened to have a kart track, so me and my dad went up there, first day, had a go, just went back every day, and found like a natural talent for it, and then when I got back to England, just started out, got a kart for my eighth birthday, and it all went off from there, really.
So you've been racing karts since you were 8 years old. How old are you now?
16, so that's 8 years racing.
Okay, and what are the series you have taken part in over the year, and what has been your biggest accomplishment in karting?
I started off in cadets until I was 11, and then I went to the junior TKM class for 2 years, and then I went to Europe and raced JICA and then ICA in Europe this year. My biggest achievement, I won the British Championship in junior TKM when I was 11, so that was probably the best achievement I've done so far. This is good.
Is there interest in the racing in the family also, or you're the lone ranger?
Well, my dad was into it, but there's no sort. My dad never used to race or anything. He just liked watched F1 and that, and just supports me, but there's no link in F1 or anything.
What is the this is December and new season is coming up. What is your agenda for the next season? Are you going to stay in karting, or are you moving to single seaters or NASCAR, which seems to be the trend these days?
Well, I'm going to be racing karts next year. I think the Belgium and the French championships, but I'm going to be doing a lot of single seater testing to get me ready for 2009 when I switch to single seaters. So it should be good fun.
And what part of England are you from?
I'm down in Exeter. It's like the southwest coast of England, so it's not bad.
And my understanding is our beloved Nigel Mansell owns a golf course or a country club close to your house. Have you ever met him?
I haven't actually met him. I've played at his course quite a few times and spoken to the pro at the golf club, and he says he's a nice guy and that, but I unfortunately haven't had the chance to meet him yet.
And I know he was trying to expand his golf club, country club, into like they wanted to have a racetrack also. So did you work in the Cancel Mansell scheme?
Well, Dunkerswell, which is the track he was trying to promote, was actually where I did my first laps when I got back to England after our holiday to Sardinia. So I'm quite in support of Nigel Mansell and his karting tracks. And no, I wasn't involved in the Cancel Mansell campaign.
Okay, Formula One season ended this year, and your homeboy Lewis Hamilton almost pulled out a surprise. Your thoughts on the F1 season, and who is your favorite driver?
This season was extremely interesting. You know, see Lewis do really well and so nearly win it at the end. But Kimi Raikkonen has always been my favourite driver, not because he won the championship this year, but he's always been my favourite driver. And he did very well, and like everyone had written him off at the last round. So when he came out and won the championship, I think it was a surprise for everyone. But no, Kimi Raikkonen is my best driver by far.
How do you think Mr. Alonso will do going back to Renault?
we'll see. Obviously, the car wasn't as competitive this year as it had been in the past, but I'm sure maybe he can help the team make the car a bit better, and we'll see. But I don't know. It was good that he didn't win it, and Lewis ended up beating them.
Safe to assume your goal is in motor racing is Formula One, and since you're still in karting, what is your game plan or career path for 5 years? And another very important question is, who is guiding your career at this stage of your life?
Well, at the moment, I've got my manager, Harry Soden, and his dad's heavily linked with Formula One and the racing teams and that. So hopefully him and his dad will be able to guide me through as much as possible. But obviously, like I said, next year I'm going to be still racing karts and testing Formula BMW. Then I'll probably do maybe one or two seasons of either Formula BMW or Formula Renault. And then hopefully move up to Formula 3, maybe do a couple of seasons of that, and then hopefully GP2 or Renault World Series, and then hopefully, you never know, but Formula 1.
Now, I understand you've been doing some... reason you are here in Bakersfield is you're testing a Formula BMW car at Button Wallow. How many test sessions have you done, and how many different tracks, and what's the big changes you see jumping from a car to a single-seater?
Well, this is my seventh day in the Formula BMW, and this is my fifth track I've tested at. There's quite a fair difference in the tracks that I've tested at. Like for example, this track is really quite bumpy and quite twisty, whereas other tracks are nice and flat and smooth. But they all vary, and they've all got their different characteristics that make them all unique. But this is an okay track. I think Alton Park is by far my favourite track. It's nice and smooth and up and down, and it's what you like to see.
And are you enjoying single-seaters as much as you thought you would?
Yes, it's extremely good fun, actually. They're a lot faster, obviously, than karts, and the acceleration's faster, and it's just, it's really, really good fun. I'd recommend it.
And what are the main differences when you're racing a kart and driving a single-seater? What is the real main difference?
Well, obviously, you've got the gears in the car, And so you've got to think about that all the time, make sure you get the gear shifts right and all that. And the car just handles quite a bit differently. It's not as sort of pointy as a kart. You really have to work the car to get the car into the corner. And whereas as a kart, you can kind of just chuck it around a bit more and it will go faster. So you've got to be a lot more smoother and like work the car to get it to go around the track.
Is this your first trip to the United States?
It is, indeed. We came on the Saturday, so we've been here 5 days now. Spent a couple of days in Beverly Hills shopping and down to Bakersfield for a bit of a race. And we're first time in the USA.
Yeah, Bakersfield and Beverly Hills, they must always be on a vacation trip of any person visiting the United States. What do you like so far, apart from the racing scene here in the U.S.?
Well, so completely different to England. Like, it's unbelievable how 2 hours away from here is luxury, and there's like really nice cars and buildings and that. And 2 hours down the road, there's absolutely nothing, like cattle ranches and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, America's definitely one of the favorite countries I've been to before.
What other countries have you been to in this big world?
Well, this year we were racing in Japan with the kart team, and then I've been to most places in Europe, like France, Spain, Italy, Portugal, the main tracks I go to race, and then I've also been to the Caribbean, Australia. So I've traveled around quite a lot since I'm only 16, so I've been lucky.
You've been around the block and the globe. Now, talking of Japan and Portugal, what other tracks that you have raced outside Jolly Good England that you like?
Well, I've only raced at kart tracks outside of England, but when we went to Japan this year, it was a really good experience. Raced alongside the Suzuka track. The track was really good, and the atmosphere was brilliant. I think there was 3,000 spectators there, so that was probably the best track I've been to outside of good old England.
How is the sushi at Suzuka?
I'm not really a sushi person, to be honest. Not at all, no. Not really into my fish.
Okay. Now, Harry, England is the home of Formula One motor racing. How many big names of Formula One have you met in your young lifetime so far?
Only one, actually. Jenson Button. And at the time, he was the main British hopeful before Lewis obviously came along. I met him at the Autosport show a couple of years ago with his dad. Seemed like a really nice guy, like really down to earth and friendly and chatty and that. But apart from him, he's the only F1 driver so far that I've met.
Do you plan to attend? You know, there are so many racing schools out there, and some of them do well, some of them advertise, you know, so and so went to our school. Do you have any plans to attend any racing schools?
Well, I think we're just gonna see how it goes at the moment with the testing with the Fortec Motorsport, and just see how it goes. But we haven't got anything planned to go to any racing schools or anything like that. But if the opportunity came along, then I'd sure like to have a good crack at it.
Okay, you mentioned Fortec Racing Team of Mr. Richard Dutton, and you mentioned you might do Formula BMW or Formula Renault. What will be the deciding factor between Formula Renault or Formula BMW, and why Dutton Motorsport, Fortec Motorsports? Have you evaluated other teams also?
Well, I think we'll have to see this year, because obviously the BMW series is going to Europe now, so there's no British series. So we'll have to see how that goes and see how it kind of runs, if it runs smoothly and all that. But I think that's going to be the main deciding factor, because if I do from the Renault, then I can race in England, whereas if I do the BMW championship, I'll be racing all over Europe against some of the best drivers. It might be quite tough in my first year. But I'm testing with Fortec quite a lot between January and March next year. But I'm sure we'll evaluate other teams. Like, obviously, we come here to test an American team, so I'm sure we'll weigh up our options before we decide which team to go with for 2009 and which series as well.
And finally, we're going to request you for a message to our listeners.
Just like to say, keep up the good work with listening to the podcast, and hopefully I'll be able to come back in a few years when I'm in Formula One and have another interview with you guys.
You know, we'll be so grateful. First of all, we'll be very happy when you're in Formula One. And secondly, we'll be very thankful. But chances are, when people get to Formula One, it's like, who is that guy?
Well, hopefully people will listen to it now, and then they'll be here in a couple of years still listening to your great show. And they'll think, oh, I've heard that guy have an interview with Dan in good old Bakersfield in California a few years ago, and now he's beating the best in Formula One. So hopefully it'll be good.
Plus, he was testing in what track now?
Buttonwillow Raceway, so at the top of American motorsport.
Buttonwillow and Bakersfield, the very best of Americana. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
Now, let's go to the wrap-up, and of course, on top, we have the forum updates.
This week's forum updates are from Iceman, and he writes, Easter greetings to one and all. The forum has had a recession, busting 600 posts since I assumed the mantle of honorary reporter. Tricky and Yay are at it again, trading insults. See Tricky's Yay on the edge of reason thread. They're acting like an old married couple. I think I can hear the old madness song in the background. It must be love, love, love. And the How I Love to Live in the Countryside opus continues to astound. However, the baked beans topic has been silent for over a week. The Malaysian race commanded the bulk of posts, with the various McLaren gates also getting top billing. Popular topics include the race and quali threads. Should Hemi quit? Should he walk and be interested in one Mellory FIA Watch 2009? The teams and drivers hurt and heel threads have made a welcome return to the 2009 season. The Skype service was buzzing come race day in Sepang, with huge activity in the message zone. Miguel, Autoracer 5, and myself commanded the voice zone. Feel free to join us at any race. The prediction contest was taken to a whole new level in the statistics available. We now have the average score and standard deviation per race, with a post-season factorial analysis to identify factors underlying the predictions to look forward to. Thanks, Miguel, for egging Yay on this. Current leader in the prediction contest is coincidentally Yay with 50 points. Leon Bray in second on 43, and Miguel a close attendance in third at 42.5. Sadly ignored of late have been the Danica and, more importantly, the Pit Babe threads. Maybe Jackson can help revive them. Our newest member is Lack. That's all from now from the east side of the Atlantic on the west coast of Europe. Remember to keep posting and always click on that ad.
Thank you, Iceman. Keep up the good work. And now we have an email.
We have an email. This one is from Greg Stubbs, and he writes, Clark, Nasser, and Steve, I am a longtime listener and felt compelled to write after the disqualification of Lewis Hamilton. I like all racing, and I know that NASCAR is often the source of some good-natured kidding, but you have to admit they do a better job of sorting out the running order during the race. Once the race is over, the results are final. F-I-N-A-L. When the FIA changes the result days after the race, it just fuels the fires of conspiracy. The FIA must get professional stewards and apply some of the leading technology in developing the cars to the creation of a scoring system that can monitor the positions of the cars at all times. Just freeze the field when there's a caution. Anyway, I will certainly be watching in Malaysia. Racing regards, Greg, and he lives in iPhone.
Yeah, a lot of people in that iPhone country now. Well, thank you. Keep up the good work. Before I go into the promo of the wrap-up, NAS, upcoming races, what's going down this weekend?
Yes, sir. We have the British F3 season starting at Alton Park, Avon GP in Portugal, which you can watch on their website at www.avongp.com. I would recommend that. Very good quality. John Watson is the commentator. Doctor in the Dark, as MotoGP season gets underway under the lights at Losail Circuit in Qatar. And the boys of summer, winter, autumn, and spring are racing at Nashville Super Speedway, which is located in Lebanon, Tennessee. But wait, there's more. I was looking at their website today, and this is an actual Q&A. And Mr. Rogers, I will let you read the question in your broadcast voice and the answer, please.
Of course. Can I bring my dog in my RV? Answer. Pets are not allowed in general or reserved RV parking on Nashville Super Speedway property.
So I guess no lucky dog in this race.
Exactly. I guess they're pretty strict over there in Nashville.
Yeah.
Well, I like that. A clean speedway is a sanitary speedway.
Yeah, in Texas you get the guns and the stats, and here you get a guitar.
Which is fine.
Johnny Guitar.
I was watching the race a couple weeks back, and I noticed they weren't calling it the lucky dog very often. They were calling it the free pass.
Not only that, but you can't sing, "There ain't nothing but a hound dog rocking all the time." Okay!
Time for Elvis to leave the building.
Exactly. So there you have it. Let's go right to the wrap-up. Of course, Marin Karting, sponsorship news from them. Ron Sutton's Winner's Circle 2009 shootout spot awarded to a young Northern California driver, Rotax Challenge driver. This is a thing they do at the end of the season in October. Keep up the good work. Ron Sutton's Winner's Circle, of course. Marin Karting is also proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to all Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Karting, 415-898-0999 or www.marincarting.com. We want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. All three sites are super active right now with new followers, girls, boys. It's exciting. And I'm telling you, go to MySpace, Facebook, or Twitter and do a search for all of us, Clark Rogers, Nazareth Meads, D-Fob, or F1 Weekly listeners, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you, there's a lot of cool members on all three of those websites. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank all the listeners that make this show possible. And F1 Weekly listeners, just a reminder that next week's podcast is going to be a special F1 Weekly edition, Sir Sterling Moss, A Conversation. And of course, our executive producer, David Tapia, Toby Dawes, who's always the machismo man on the website, Nasser Hamid, and my co-host, Steve Faub. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.